Let's go to Baltimore now, where yesterday a judge rejected motions to dismiss murder and other charges against six police officers in the death of Freddie Gray. The young black man who died in police custody after being dragged into a police van in Baltimore. Judge Barry Williams also ordered separate trials for each of the officers. But frustrations for the city's African Americans extend far beyond police-community relations. Local leaders say they also face major challenges over access to jobs, education, and housing. Today's Baltimore was shaped by a history of racial segregation. And when you look at public housing in the city, it has served as a safety net for the poor, but it's also perpetuated segregation and generational poverty. Jonna McCone from WYPR in Baltimore reports on a new push in public housing and how the past is never really past.
We're standing here at McCullough Homes. It was actually one of the first public housing developments erected by the Housing Authority at the time.
Lawrence Brown and I are walking through an area of West Baltimore that, for Brown, is an example of how the Housing Authority of Baltimore City and city planners created segregated public housing. Brown's a professor at Morgan State University here. He looks at how racial segregation can affect health, in particular, how government housing policies of the past shape the Baltimore of today.
McCullough Homes function as a buffer between, to our west, what would have been Black Baltimore at the time, and to our east, there's the Bolton Hill community, which is white. And so by placing this here, it basically said this would be a Black community, and that's going to stay a white community.
We're walking through Upton, once one of the most prominent African-American neighborhoods in the nation. It was called the Jewel of the Chesapeake. Today, the median income is $16,000, and over half of families live below the poverty line.
When public housing was erected, you had slum clearance. So it tore down Black communities that were existing at the time. It might have improved to some degree the type of housing that Black people lived in because the tenements were very, very poorly designed. But at the same time, it tore communities apart.
In the first half of the 20th century, millions of African Americans left rural areas for cities like Baltimore, and the demand for low-cost housing skyrocketed. To hold down costs, projects were built big. Clusters of isolated high-rises surrounded small communal outdoor spaces. But by the 90s, many buildings were in such bad shape that they had to be torn down. It wasn't just that the high-rise model had failed. Housing authorities mismanaged funds, they faced lawsuits, and often did not adequately maintain buildings. Across the country today, about a million government-controlled units need $25 billion in repairs.
They're not taking care of it right.
86-year-old Leon Palmer sits on a stoop outside of his housing project in northwest Baltimore. He's lived in Bell Park Towers for more than 20 years.
Anything breaks down, it takes a long time. Hot water. If we don't have hot water on Friday, it breaks down, you got to wait till Monday to get it fixed. And you know, that's not right, because I need it for my legs and things.
In 1974, the Housing and Community Development Act authorized what's now called the Housing Choice Voucher Program, or Section 8. Vouchers shifted the housing of poor people to private entities. With vouchers, families pay a portion of their rent, based on their income, to private landlords. The government covers the rest. About 13,000 families use a voucher program in Baltimore today.
Public housing, you know, quote unquote, failed in a very public way. And they needed to come up with a solution that addressed the problem in a very visible way.
Eva Rosen is a fellow in the Poverty and Inequality Research Lab at Johns Hopkins University.
We could see the state of the buildings. You know, we saw images of police trying to go into these developments and deal with crime. We saw images of just the state of the apartments on the inside, the holes in the walls, the elevators not working, lights out in the stairways. And these are problems we still actually hear about.
At a meeting at the Bell Park Housing Project, where Leon Palmer lives, staff from the Housing Authority of Baltimore City explained a new program called Rental Assistance Demonstration, or RAD, that would get the Housing Authority much-needed funds.
So we can get this work done in 2 years instead of 2 months.
Real estate companies would no longer just lease to people in their buildings, as they do with vouchers, but would buy a share of public housing buildings.
You can borrow money and use other affordable housing programs that are not available when you're using the public housing subsidy itself. The laws are different, the rules are different.
Peter Engel is with the Baltimore Housing Authority. He says RAD frees up desperately needed funds.
What it allows a housing authority to do is to go to the private sector to borrow funds and to use the low-income housing tax credit program. And both of those programs allow us to bring in a lot of capital to rehab these buildings.
But sociologist Ed Goetz of the University of Minnesota worries that RAD signals a cutback in government commitment to public housing.
This is a case of Congress and subsequent administrations not providing housing authorities with the funds needed to keep up the housing stock. So let's not forget from the beginning that this is a financial crisis that is entirely created by the government.
Goetz says that past public-private models were a complete rethinking of public housing, focused on attracting private sector investment.
It has been driven by this logic of dispersal and deconcentration of poverty, which has justified the demolition of a lot of units of public housing and the loss of that housing stock.
We are the backbone of Baltimore. We are the workers that do the jobs nobody want to do.
Critics worry rental assistance leans too heavily on the private sector, and residents like Gary Shroud are concerned the new RAD program does not ensure long-term affordable housing in a city where 70,000 people are on the waiting list for subsidized housing and the average wait time to get into a home, 11 years, though especially vulnerable people wait less than a year.
And now you want us to live where nobody wants to live? We don't think so!
Residents and housing advocates have been trying to get more say in how RAD is implemented in Baltimore. Again, Peter Engel with HABC, the city's housing authority.
HABC will continue to be a partial owner in each of the developments, so it'll be a true public-private partnership. But by bringing in these developers, we can access this capital that otherwise we couldn't get.
But many public housing residents are worried about the future. That sentiment echoed through a meeting between renters and the tenant group that advises the housing authority.
And you need to get together with the tenant council, whoever they... And get this stuff out and work it out, because I'm not going nowhere.
So there's a lot of misinformation.
That's Gary Shroud from the RAD protest. He helped facilitate the meeting.
When you privatize, you should be able to have a voice in it. I'm not organizing a gang to go out here and commit crimes. I'm organizing people to understand where they live, how they live, what they can do to help themselves live better. If you don't know what's going on, you can't help yourself.
Back at McCullough Homes, where two apartment buildings will be rehabbed through RAD, Morgan State's Lawrence Brown considers the future.
This is valuable property. It's all about real estate. This is the first city to sort of employ RAD on such a large level. That's all the remainder of the high rises in the city. And a lot of them are elders and where seniors live. So in 20 or 30 or 40 years, you won't have a lot of opposition because most of the people that live there won't be alive anymore. No matter what this looks like, you're actually sitting on a gold mine, and you need to do everything you can to stay where you are and to take control of it if you can.
As the city moves forward, there's a lot at stake, and people like Lawrence Brown, who study public housing, will be trying to figure out if partnering with private companies is a good investment in public housing's affordability for people who need it, or is it a step in the dismantling of poor communities. For Here and Now, I'm Jonna McCone in Baltimore.